bit about Forbidden. We floated in 2000, which was a bit early, just as a new company, but it was a good time to raise money. We were sort of the ultimate TMT stock, technology, media, and telecoms. Of course, they had invented the word cloud, apparently, but we hadn't heard the word cloud. But we set about making a platform for video on the cloud. The ultimate platform was the objective, and you'll see what we've achieved so far. So we've called the platform Forcene, and it's used for cloud-based video post-production. And the fact it's post-production rather than broadcast avoids quite a lot of the technical issues that John Watkinson raised earlier about real-time delivery. We have frame-accurate access for our web browser, and that includes everything from logging and review to rough-cut editing and fine-cut editing. And then in the end, hosting. We don't do much hosting, but we can, obviously, in this cloud platform. We actually won a Royal Television Society Award in 2005 for being a disruptive technology. And we already had an editing system running in the cloud even before everyone had invented the word cloud. But as you'll see as I go through, there are issues that are non-technical that delay the adoption of new technology. We've had 1 million hours of professionally shot video through our system earlier this year. We've passed 1 million hours. So it shows it's not just like some guy in a shed. This is actually an industrial scale application. So a bit of history. This is just to show the time it takes. We made a software editing system during the 1990s where everyone else needed hardware. And that was based on the Acorn machine and the ARM chip. And in fact, the ARM chip, I think, may replace quite a lot of the Intel chips in all these servers just because of the power consumption. But we'll see what happens over the next few years. Because we ran in software, it meant that when the internet came along and everyone had their web browsers that could run software, we could move our software into the web browser, which gave us a head start over companies like Avid, who had very hardware-based systems. And we use a virtual machine, but it's a different one to the ones that we've been talking about. We use Java, which runs in essentially every web browser. It runs on PCs and Macs and Linux. And it means that you don't have to install software in order to run our editing system. But you see, it took another 10 years from when we floated to actually really deliver a mass scale system. So challenges, well, it's a very conservative industry. And I mean, these figures have been challenged, but it's taken roughly 40 years to move from standard definition to high definition for wide acceptance in broadcast. But we moved our system from standard definition to high definition in 1 year. And that's what used to be called internet time. Things move very quickly because the whole IT infrastructure, whole IT is moving. And one of the questions was, what's different now from 10 years ago? And the answer is, well, for a start, the internet's 1,000 times faster. And that makes a big difference if you're providing services over the internet. And another change is that the disk storage is 1,000 times bigger. So for the same cost, you have 1,000 times the storage. And that means that if you have a cloud-based video system, it was sort of not very practical 10 years ago because people just had dial-up modems, you could get small jerky pictures, and then you couldn't store much video anyway. But nowadays, you can have as much video as you like. I mean, we had tens of thousands of hours, you know, it's a drop of a hat, each server's. I think the last one was 25,000 hours of storage. But you do need new workflows, and that's the biggest issue for broadcast, I think. So what sort of concerns have we had over the years? We launched this in 2004. The first issue was, of course, everyone said you couldn't edit video in a browser. It was impossible because you needed an expensive piece of hardware. And that's not actually true, but when everyone says it's impossible, you know, even if you show it to them, they say, oh, well, it probably wouldn't work in practice, or it never worked in practice, even when they have it in front of them, because it's perceived wisdom. Second thing is everyone's saying, oh, but this isn't a broadcast solution, it's an IT solution. So the IT department won't like it, because we're using IT resources. So actually, quite a few people have installed it without asking their IT department, because we've made a system that works on the existing infrastructure. And in fact, we got into quite a lot of trouble at the BBC because of that, but perhaps I'll tell you about that privately. So third thing is new workflows. So it's outside the comfort zone of a typical production. They have a way of working, and suddenly you're doing everything in the cloud, and it's all different. And what does that mean? And yes, I think people have to be aware of what they need to do, but actually, we've tried to make the workflows as similar as possible to what people are used to. Obviously, how does it integrate with Final Cut and Avid? Because there are all these editors out there who need to use the systems they're used to. Who else is using it? So by now, they're starting to think it might be a good idea. but you know, they don't want to be the first one. But with a million hours behind us, you know, you're not the first ones. So that's a big help. Can we trust the cloud? Big question was asked earlier. And the answer is, well, I mean, can you trust your mains electricity? You don't have a generator in your building, and if the electricity is cut, then none of your editing systems, none of your Final Cuts or Avid are going to work. And the thing about the cloud is, well, it's the same sort of thing. It's like the electricity, so it's like the mains electricity supply of information technology. And it's so important to the economy that they'll fix it if it goes wrong. I think that's something that we just have to accept these days. It's so important they'll fix it. And then the last concern was that, well, the old ways work, so why do it a new way? And the answer for us was the credit crunch. Suddenly people couldn't afford to do it the old way because there wasn't enough money. And that's when all the people who said how brilliant our system was for years and years all started to use it. So there are opportunities. Access from anywhere, any device, any network. So you can use it wherever you are, you can just sit down and use it. It's scalable. So if you've ever made a TV program, you'll know that you book a certain number of edit suites, and then it gets to the last week and you suddenly realize you need more edit suites, but perhaps there aren't any in your facility. But if you're in the cloud, you can just have as many resources as you like because you're part of a much bigger system. Just like you can switch on an extra light bulb and it's not going to blow your fuse. Obviously, if you have too many light bulbs, it will, but you can have essentially as much resources as you like as a single user because you're only a small part of the system. Everything's backed up. Of course, everyone here I know regularly backs up all their material, but in the cloud, you don't have to worry because it is backed up. You can, of course, back it up yourself, and we encourage people to keep their own copies of material. Cooperation between multiple suppliers, and I'll show you a picture of that coming along. But in the cloud, everyone's connected, so it's not like you have different applications and you don't run one or the other, because all the cloud suppliers can work together, and in fact, we have I think some people from Chiron with their access system in the audience, and we've heard from the previous gentleman was using ElasticHost, which is a different cloud supplier. People can work together. It's low cost, low capital cost and running cost. We've made ours specifically low capital cost because it fits in a production budget, but it's also low running cost. So a typical use of our system is about a 20th the cost of hiring an Avid edit suite. So it gives you an idea of the scale, because all we have to do is manufacture a web page. It's a lot cheaper than making a system and upgrading the operating system and all that side of things. Then there's whole industry changing. So this is slightly more controversial. I've just been to the Google Video Summit in Switzerland, and it's obviously a very different audience, the audience here, but they're all talking about deliveries over the internet. Google has more ad revenue in the UK than all the television companies in the UK. So. And they're providing video. They see the future of the internet as video distribution. The whole world is changing. There are mobile devices, which you've heard. You can watch video on your phone, and you can watch it on your TV, and you can watch it on your desktop PC. But you have to make content for all these different devices. They've got different screen sizes. They've got different types. You know, you might want to watch a 40-minute program, 50-minute program on your TV, but you're not going to want to watch it on your mobile phone. You're much more likely to want to watch small snippets. So you need to make all this content. And the whole industry, it's been working in this sort of tape-based workflow fundamentally for a long time, but now with tapeless cameras, we're ripe for a transformation in workflows, a revolution in workflows, and the cloud is going to be part of that, I believe. So what do we want in a cloud post-production system? Well, the first thing is, I mean, everyone talks about craft editing, but if you go to the BBC, they'll tell you there are 1,000 people involved in every production, but only 25 people see video of any quality, and only 5 people see the full resolution video of the 1,000 people. So you can think, yes, you know, post-production, there's all making videos, you all need high definition. Actually, that's a small part of it. Much more of it is to do with managing the content in post-production. People now, because production's so cheap, they might shoot 500 or 1,000 hours of material for a series, and you just need to be able to find your clips. We'd also, as a cloud system, want to use readily available resources. We'd like it to work on your existing PC or Mac, on your internet connection, without having to like do any, well, basically without getting IT involved. Just work in existing systems. We want integration with existing systems, for example, Final Cut and Avid, and obviously the broadcast systems at the far end, and reliable. So people have said, well, won't we just have as unreliable software on the cloud? So I'll ask you all a question. Who here has used Google? Does anyone use Google? Quite a lot of you. Who here have used Google and it crashed when they used it? Okay, three. Right. So the point about a cloud system is it does crash, and they, you know, happy to volunteer this, but they only have to fix it once, and then everyone in the world gets the fixed version. And that is a big difference between a cloud system and a desktop application. So if we have a solution and it's got a bug in it, we fix the bug once and the bug works everywhere. If there's a feature that's missing that people are asking for, we add it once and everyone has the new solution. So it does slightly change the balance between, you know, we don't have people with year-old versions or two-year-old versions. We don't have Windows 3.1 users, you know, with some old version, because people have the latest version. So what's a cloud post-production workflow look like? Well, you shoot the video, and then you ingest it, so that would be just like a normal workflow. And then you can review the rushes if you want to. Producer might want to check that the material's been shot, so a bit like the current system. You log the material, because there's far too much material for the editor to find the shots, so you log it, so you add text metadata to the material, and then there's a search engine, and you can find the shots in an instant. And then you do a rough cut, that's normally done by the producers and directors in our system. And then you do a fine cut, which is mostly, broadcasters don't generally do fine cuts on our system, they do it on Avid and Final Cut. But some do on our system, they have done, particularly when they've had international cooperation and they need different people in different countries to be able to access the material. But it's used a lot for internet video. We essentially use for fine cut for internet video, which, as you'll discover, is probably becoming more common than broadcast video. And all these broadcasters, as they're now called, will be distributing in a few years their content over the internet. And then I've skipped out lots of stages to get to finish. So none of the audio dubbing, none of the color correction, because we're running on a cloud system and I'm using just a random computer. Who knows if the colors are right? I haven't got a gray one monitor. I don't have my Eggbox full dubbing studio. So I'll just leave that to someone else. So the cloud post-production, these stages are very similar to what you might do on a desktop system. But of course, you can run it on any computer and you can run it anywhere. And that means there are changes to sort of more fundamental, deeper changes to the workflows. So first of all, why do these stages? Why review the content? Well, you only have to upload it once. Well, it might already be uploaded because you're using the cloud for a variety of things, so you just put your content in the cloud. You can view it from multiple places. You might need different people to approve something. Of course, you can, you know, it's not all couriering tapes to people, you know, these days. You can FTP it, but then you have to FTP it to the right person. If they're not in that office, they can't see it. You know, you might need, if they're in someone else's office, you might not want it on their servers. But with a web-based system, they can just go to the website from anywhere, from a cyber cafe, if they're in the airport, they can log on, review it. They can add frame-accurate comments because it's interactive. It's not like just sending someone a CD and then, you know, they can't tell you, you know, it's wrong, but they can't really tell you how. It's all frame-accurate, and there's no setup required. You just go to a computer, you type a web address, and there you have the material. Why log? Well, there's two uses. The main one that you'll be probably more familiar with is editing. There's an explosion in the amount of shot material, particularly with DV, because the DV tapes are so cheap, and as you know, they've saved money, or you've saved money, by not rehearsing the scenes. You just shoot anything, particularly for things like reality TV. You shoot anything in case it's okay, and your cameraman doesn't want to miss something because, you know, they can always sort it out in post, so you get your hundreds of hours of material. And then with tapeless, you have lots of clips, so they're shorter clips, and in principle the cameraman can delete them, but we often have 40,000 clips for a production. So how are you going to find the clip that you want in 40,000 clips? And the traditional way, of if you have a short amount of material, I mean, when I started in video, which is 20 years ago, there would be like perhaps 20 or 30 hours of material, you'd give it all to the craft editor, he'd watch it all through once, which would take a week, and then he would know, because he's an editor, he'd know where all the shots were. And when you asked for the shot of the pigeon landing on the, you know, Nelson's Column in Trafalgar Square, he'd say, oh yes, that was you know, reel 52, and I'll fish it out for you. But now he's got 1,000 hours of material. He can't even watch it once. So if you were going trying to find the shot of the pigeon in Trafalgar Square from your 1,000 hours, it would take you around 1,000 hours to go through all the material to find it. And then you've got the first shot. And then I want the shot of the taxi, you can sign from London, I want the shot of the black cab approaching, you know, Buckingham Palace, going past Buckingham Palace. Well, another 1,000 hours later, you found your material. And then, of course, I forgot to tell you, but my series, 12-part series, has got 10,000 shots in it. And each one's going to take you 1,000 hours. You can see it's quite a problem. The amount of time it takes to actually find the material. And what logging does, you go through the all material once, 1,000 hours, and then you've got a search engine, and as fast as you can type, faster than you can type, you can find all the taxi shots, all the pigeon shots, and that means you spend 1,000 hours once, and instead of doing it for every shot, you do it once, and then you can find any shot in a fraction of a second if you're a good typist. So it makes editing a tractable problem, and I've called it order n. I don't know how many technical people understand that. But normally it would be n squared, so if you have twice as much material, it would take four times as long. If you have 100 times as much material, it would take 10,000 times as long. But this turns editing into an order n problem, so if you have twice as much material, it takes twice as long. And that means you can make programs with a lot of content. But there's a whole other side, which is for publishing. And lots of publishing now is on the web. And what you need to be able to do is to find the video. You need to search it. And what you need for that is metadata, which is, in fact, exactly the metadata we had in the first part. And the key there is monetization, because someone's got to pay for this video. And who's going to pay for it? In the real world, it's advertisers. And they're only going to pay for ads if they're on the right videos. They don't want to pay for ads on irrelevant videos because no one's going to watch them. So the fact you've got metadata from the post-production, you can carry that right through to the publishing, and it gives you really good access to the, if you need, frame accurate access to the content, both for search and for advertising monetization. So editing, I've kept this simple because I'll probably give you a little demo at the end. Why do editing in the cloud? It saves time because everything's available. You don't have to worry about where anything is. You can have a quick look at home or at work, or even here I've got access to all my material. Saves money, saves time and money are the two big things the production companies tell us. And typically it saves half your budget. And it works on existing infrastructure, so why wouldn't you use it? You don't have to buy an Avid or buy a Final Cut, you just use whatever you've got. So here's a typical broadcast workflow, and this raises a slight issue about the cloud, which hasn't been mentioned. The bit in this sort of greeny-blue colour is typically at a facilities house, and then the bit on the right is sort of out there in the cloud and in someone's office and perhaps at home. And what you typically do is you have storage, which is, say, an Avid or Edit Share system, and what our server does is it sucks all the material off automatically, and then you can edit it locally. Or, in fact, as well as, it backs it up onto the cloud. And when it's in the cloud, you can access it remotely, both for editing and for logging on a standard system. And what this really shows is the question, where does the cloud end? And we've drawn it here, which is our cloud server, as having a limit. But really, this proxy server in the facilities house is also part of our cloud, as is the client machines. All the client machines are part of the cloud. And we have this fat client system where all the real computing power is done by the client. So the real-time rendering of effects, audio levels, video levels, the search, fast searches, they're all done by the client. And because all of things like the effects are rendered in real-time by the client, because we have plenty of computer time, as has been pointed out, you don't have to wait for anything. You never have to wait for the servers to do anything. And the servers don't really have to do very much, which means if we suddenly get 10 times as many people using our cloud, they bring with them their own computers. They bring with them their own computer power. So the whole system is very scalable, and that makes it very, very low cost. And all our servers really do is storage. And, you know, I mean, we've been quoted 2 gigabytes or something a month. I'd say we charge a lot more than that, but it's still, when you've got everything together, it's still 20 times cheaper than an Avid. And that just shows the technology there. The last thing I've added here is why publish. Well, internet distributions are made the major growth market, and even people like the BBC with the iPlayer and Channel 4 and all these companies are broadcasting a lot of their material. Well, not broadcasting, they're distributing a lot of their material over the internet. So you really should have an efficient integrated workflow where you can shoot and you can edit in a system, but you can also distribute on the same system. And of course, you get the metadata from search by having the integrated workflow. All that work you've done paying loggers to put in absolute detail what is in your 1,000 hours of source material, that's all available to the search engines and to the publishing. And the last thing you get for publishing is feedback from your users, which you don't really get very good feedback on broadcast television. But if you publish on the web, you know exactly what they watch, where they stop it, what they got bored, what they click on, what they don't click on. And that feedback is what Google particularly specializes in, is sort of understanding your mind. And I mean, might think it's slightly sinister, but actually you don't have to use the information if you don't want it. But having it there, you get a much better service to the customers. So there are new distribution platforms, multi-device publishing I touched on. There's TV, desktop, laptop, tablets, and I've got a tablet here which I'll show you in a minute, and mobile. And the limiting factor is the culture. People are used to making things for television, they have workflows for television, but actually the audience doesn't know that there's this television workflow. They just have a device and they just want to watch video on it, or potentially make video on it these days. So web distribution workflow is similar to the broadcast one, but you generally don't edit on site because you might have, you don't need to. But what you do have is distribution, so you can export full high definition, and this is not for broadcast, so we've got another red box here that does the broadcasting of it, as it were, the serving of it, but we just export one copy. We also have low bitrate output for viewing, but you also have the logging and editing. It's all in the same system. So it's a slightly different emphasis because it includes distribution, different emphasis. And when you look at the traditional broadcast systems like Avid and Final Cut and EditWorks, Lightworks is making a comeback, they predate the internet access. And most Avids aren't even on the internet because they're on Windows and it's too vulnerable. But in the modern world, everything's connected. So there are some optimizations relevant to cloud post-production. The first one is dual ingest. So you get your material from your camera and you put it in the server and it comes out the other end because we've got an in and an out socket and it goes into your Avid storage and into the full scene cloud. So here it doesn't cost you anything extra to put something into full scene in point of view of labor or time because everything that goes into full scene goes into your Avid. But there's a more modern workflow which we use is you put things into your Avid storage or EditShare, any of these big systems, multiple amounts of material, I mean tens of thousands of hours. It's automatically sucked out by our server and put in the cloud. And this bottom one involves no human intervention. You just do what you were doing before with your Avid and suddenly your entire material's in the cloud, accessible to full scene to anyone who's got a password. This is the metadata search. So the blue line shows the source material. You have to log it once, so you have to spend this much time. But when you want to find the shots dotted around, you've got a search, and it's essentially instant. You only have to look at the bit you're after or a few bits with the matching metadata. And that makes the whole of editing much faster process. Because when you've got this much material, it's finding your shots, which is what takes the time in post-production. So having a search engine, which is just like Google, you can have inclusion and exclusion in your search terms. That's what really transforms the post-production. Next point is parallel working. So I've got my cloud here, and I mean, how many people are going to be logging my material? I've got 1,000 hours. Well, I've got 5 here. But I mean, how many people can use Google? It's not like 5 or 10 or 1,000. You know, you can have as many people as you like. So if my production decides that they're getting a bit behind and they want another 20 loggers, they just buy another 20 licenses and they've got another 20 loggers and they suddenly got 25 loggers. And they can do, you know, a day each or a program each or a reel each and just work through it. And the whole thing with parallel working works a lot faster. And then you get someone keeping an eye on them, which they can do because everything's in the cloud and you can see who's doing what work. You're paying freelancers, you know how much time they spent because the system monitors how much time they spent. You can see how many tapes they've done. And you can give feedback if they're putting the wrong metadata in or you can see if they can spell and things like that. Then there's collaborative working, which is a bit more sophisticated. Here you've got, for example, you've got the loggers, you've got the management, you've got a client who might be commenting on the material, and you've got an editor and a director, and they can all look at the material at the same time with their different roles. So an editor might be saying to the director, well, you know, I've got this shot, but actually it doesn't quite work artistically because, you know, this shot's too short, or I don't have the shot of the seminar room from the right side. Can you go and shoot a new shot? And then a director can look at it, see what he's talking about, say, yes, you're right, I'm just getting another shot of that. Talk to the cameraman and say, please, will you shoot this shot again? We'll do it again. And then it all goes back through the cloud. Everyone can talk to each other. Everyone can find out what's going on. So collaborative working, I mean, it's a real key point, but it's sort of what you expect. And yet you have an Avid editor in a basement somewhere working on his own. The whole of video production is a collaborative thing. And this allows the collaboration to happen. Mobile devices. So imagine you've got a meeting to discuss things. You all have to be there. And that's great if you're all there, you can have your meeting. But supposing someone's missing, well, then the meeting doesn't really work properly or you have to postpone the meeting. So even though the operator is doing the ingest and the work editor at work on his PC and the logger might be at home on his Mac, even though they're all available, the producer's out and about because there's an important person, he's networking. And he just wants to check, you know, he's got an iPhone or something. The director's on his tablet. How can he see it? Well, the answer is, of course, that these modern devices are very fast and you can actually run your whole craft editing system on a tablet. Although I don't think the director will be doing craft editing on the tablet, but they will be able to review edits and give feedback. It's got frame-accurate comments. It's got a built-in chat system, so you can liaise with the other users. And everything you do on here, this is in the cloud, just like the Mac is and all the other machines. Everything I type on here appears immediately everywhere in the world. So that is really allows to have a meeting to discuss things which you wouldn't be able to do otherwise. pipelined working. So a traditional workflow, you shoot the material, and you have to shoot everything just in case because you might miss some important shot. So you just shoot loads of stuff. Then you ingest it, then you log it, then you do your rough cut, and then you do your fine cut. Okay, and that's great, but it takes a long time, and you have to shoot quite a lot of material because you never know what might be needed. But in a pipelined workflow, you do your shooting, and you do the ingest at the same time, or just slightly later. And then you do your logging, because why shouldn't the logger be logging it while you're ingesting it, you know, while you're shooting it? Then you can do your rough cut, and then you can start the fine cut. If you're doing a 12-part series, you can start working on the programs. And the point about this is you can get feedback. So if they're doing the rough cut, and they discover that they're missing a shot, then they can report back to the people doing the shooting on the chat system, we need another shot of, you know, the cars in the car park. We don't have any shots of the car park, and we realize we need that. And alternatively, they can say, you know, they've got so many shots of speakers standing up in front of a podium, don't shoot any more shots of speakers, because although only half the people have had their, you know, their speaking, we've got enough for the program. So you don't have to shoot just in case. And that typically halves the amount of shooting you need to do. And that, of course, halves the amount of ingest you need to do, and it halves the amount of logging you need to do. And when you get your rough cut, there's much less material you need, and you get much more relevant material. And all this is possible because you're in the cloud, and everything is accessible to everyone. Whereas if you're shooting on location and editing in London, and then the producers, you know, networking up in Scotland, you wouldn't be able to get this sort of feedback. And it's the feedback and the collaborative working that is a real saving of cloud post-production. Accessibility. So we've heard this about the cloud. Any device, including the tablets, anytime. Obviously, it's on the web. You can access the web anytime. It's not like this broadcast idea where it's only available when you want. It's not like an edit suite where they, you know, the transport stops. You can't go in the middle of the night because there's no way to get there and get back, or they might lock the doors and get logged. Anytime, you can do it from anywhere. So if someone says, "I've got this brilliant cut. What do you think of this idea?" and you're at home, you don't have to commute for an hour into Soho, because you just log on to your machine at home, and it saves you an hour there and an hour back. Anybody, and this is another slight issue which is happening with broadcast, is this multi-skilling idea. So yes, for the high-end drama productions, yes, you've got £250,000 a minute, and it's brilliant, and you've got your cameraman, your lighting man, your soundman, and everything. But when you get to things like news broadcast, you've probably just got a guy with a camera, and he's doing his own sound, he doesn't have lighting, it's a much lower budget system, and he's a journalist. And it, suddenly, you're saying, actually, we want you to do the whole editing and make the whole program. And you can't do that on a really, really high-end dedicated system because you need 3 months to learn how it works. What you need is a much simpler system. And this is particularly useful for web distribution, where the budgets are much lower. But increasingly, with the number of television channels and the budgets, I think we'll see multi-skilling, and this sort of anybody in broadcast. And of course, you can always leave the rough cut for the craft editor to finish because he's got access to the material too. But it means you can get a lot of the work done with much less skilled people. So what's about the integration with distribution? You shoot, as usual, production, you do the post-production, and you add the metadata, you end up with your finished program, and then it goes to distribution, and we've added here metadata and search for advertising. That is the key link that is lost on almost all internet video. And, you know, sometimes they make the program, then they sort of add some tags, but they don't really know who the people in the audience were because it's some guy adding tags later, you know, and no one can be bothered to write pages and pages of tags. So having the metadata from the post-production, having that link, I think is going to be really important going forwards. Integration with third-party applications. So I've mentioned Chiron is in the audience here, and they'll be speaking later. We also link with Amazon S3. We've had Amazon mentioned the EC2 system. But a lot of the publishing we do is to Amazon, who then host it, very scalable system. We also have access to source libraries. So in broadcast, I mean, everyone says, oh, well, we've got enough library footage. But actually having it available, searchable in the cloud is a big cost saving. Obviously, we integrate with the Avid and FTP servers. We've had to do that integration ourselves because they're not really cloud systems, but it still integrates over the cloud, effectively. Social networking, we have a publish to Facebook button now. So you can have published to any of these social networking sites, and you think, well, I'm a broadcaster, why do I need that? Well, the answer is because your trailers are going to go onto social networking sites because that's how people are going to find out about your programs. So, you know, even things like this, just be able to just drag your program, drop it in, suddenly it's there, 500 million Facebook readers, viewers know about your program. And then content management system for personal use, for professional use, things like newspapers, they distribute over the web typically now. You can get web-only application. I've got a Financial Times subscription. It's web-only. And obviously, you need to be able to distribute through their systems. So more recently, things have picked up speed. The first significant third-party sales agreement for our cloud system was 2008. So if you like that, took 18 years. A year later, we transformed our system to make it much more scalable. You could just plug in new devices. And then this year, we launched an end-to-end high-definition workflow. So you don't need any other system. You can do it entirely on your PC or your Mac in the cloud. Made our first cloud server sale. So we have our cloud server, which is what all our video goes through. But now we have a couple of systems integrators who are making their own cloud servers and distributing one for Africa. It's got the distribution rights to Africa, one for India. And as you know, India's got 1.2 billion people, and it's a pretty big video market. And then the last thing that's happened this year is a tablet. We have a version running on the tablet. So conclusion, cloud post-production is coming of age. I mean, everyone uses Google, everyone uses Facebook, everyone uses eBay and Amazon, and now post-production is here, really. A million hours, it's here. Foreseen leads in post-production, and yes, I did see the Avid system, and it'd be interesting when that comes out. They have a slightly different architecture to us, so that'll be interesting as well. They use a thin client, and that means their servers can't support very many users because all the work's done on the server. Because we do the work in the client, we can have 1,000 users on each server, so we're sort of effectively 1,000 times cheaper. But anyway, that will come out of in the next few years. Mass extension to new distribution channels. That's really important because that's where people are going to be watching your video. You know, and I agree the mobile phone's a bit small, but this is actually not that bad if you're sitting with it in front of you. And we have the iPad and we have a whole range of these devices. No, it's not that bad. And you can always watch it on your TV. And the last thing is metadata for editing and for reuse, because again, most of our productions just shoot everything from scratch every time, because they can't find the material. And this is the problem with the BBC's 100,000 hours and why they did their DMI, partly so they could actually find the library footage. But if you have the metadata in the editing system, just built into the post-production, then you already have all the metadata. You don't need to sort of add it later. It means all the material you make is a lot more valuable further down the line. And advertising is where, so I think something like 85% of internet video will be paid for by advertising, and it's whatever percentage in broadcast. It's quite a lot. I mean, apart from a few state broadcasters, it's advertising funded. Right, so that's the end of that.
3 Are there any questions for Stephen now?
Howard Steed from Steed Consulting. Just one question. Have you come across any resistance from broadcasters in terms of copying their sort of valuable content out to the cloud, and how have you addressed that resistance?
Yes, so the answer is yes, particularly from the big ones like the BBC and ITV. What they would say was, well, we'd say, well, you don't have to copy it out to the cloud. You can have a cloud server in your office. All you need to do is fill in a form 10Q and a form 35B and all the rest of it. And so they say, oh, we'll go and do that. And then sort of 2 months later, the production starts. And we say, oh, you did fill in all those forms. They said, oh, yes, but for some reason, the bureaucracy hasn't given us permission to install a new machine inside the network. But we have to start because we've got a deadline. So we say, well, why don't you just use our cloud? Oh, well, OK, we'll just try your cloud then and, you know, we'll just do that. And then that's what they've done. And all the productions have used our cloud, even though they have the possibility of using their own clouds, because the big companies, it's the bureaucracy, they just cannot get approval in the time it takes in a production cycle. And the small companies would rather all the advantages that we've been mentioned of a private cloud, which is they don't have any of the IT issues of maintenance. So in practice, no, they haven't worried.
Dave Bancroft, Bancroft Technical Consulting. I was just intrigued by one of the analogies you made. You said people were a bit nervous about using external web resources, but they were okay about the fact that electricity was generated somewhere else. But the problem I had with that was that with electricity, you can use an uninterruptible power supply. You can't get an uninterruptible internet supply, which then switches over to your standby diesel-powered internet. So
how do I answer that?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's two points. So I've got my demo here running on Wi-Fi, but I've also got my 3G connection running on my tablet. Okay, so if my demo doesn't work on the Wi-Fi because the hotel internet connection breaks, I've got a completely different internet connection through the 3G that I can use. So because obviously for a demo you need belt and braces. If your machine breaks, your internet in your office breaks, you just go down to the cyber cafe, you know, in Starbucks, you get free internet access and you can carry on there. So, you know, the point is that if the internet collapsed in a serious way, then that would be the end of the economy. And if you look at our data centers, they are terrorist-proof, and they've got, you know, they'll switch it back on in 3 seconds if something goes wrong. You know, these are much more resilient than just a mains power supply, because so much depends on them. And I think, you know, there's a bit of trust in here, but the whole internet doesn't break very often, and they try and make sure it won't.
How does the total budgeting compare if you want to achieve comparable quality of service between traditional and...
Well, you just if your internet breaks, you just go down to the cyber cafe. It doesn't cost anything.
Well, that... Okay.
I mean, how often does it happen? Not very often. And if it does happen, we have 2 internet connections at work. We have a Wi-Fi and we have a fixed line, and they go through different providers. So we've got a consumer one for £15 a month as our backup, and it's 15 megabits, you know, £15 a month. So, I mean, it's not expensive, I think is the answer.